Is there life elsewhere in the universe?
How does life begin and evolve?
What is the future of life?
Welcome to Radio Astrobiology, an interstellar podcast of Astrobiology Magazine, a NASA-sponsored publication. We invite you to discover the latest news of humanity's greatest adventure, exploring topics like the search for life, detecting habitable planets, life on early Earth, exploring the Moon, Mars, and beyond. Tune in each week as we offer new features like Ask an Astrobiologist, Great Debates, Naked Astrobiology, and more. And now, join us as we unveil the mysteries and bare the scientific essentials in this week's program, Naked Astrobiology, with our host, Simon Mitten.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Simon Mitten, the founder of the International Journal of Astrobiology and an astronomer based at the University of Cambridge. Join me in this week's edition of Naked Astrobiology as I speak face-to-face with one of the European Space Agency's leading scientists, Dr. David Southwood, who is Director of Science. I caught up with Dr. Southwood at a recent meeting of the Royal Astronomical Society in London, where we discussed the Space Agency's overarching missions. In this, the first of a two-part interview, we'll talk about ESA's Gaia, Rosetta, and Darwin programs, which aim to understand the initial interstellar conditions that helped create the right circumstances for life. And then we'll discuss ESA's newly announced astrobiology flagship missions, Aurora and ExoMars, and go on to future plans to visit the giant planets and the moons of Jupiter, in particular, of course, Europa. Together, these missions are expected to make a tremendously important contribution to the science of astrobiology. So, welcome, Dr. Southwood.
Would you like to say something about the overarching Aurora program to begin with?
Well, actually, Aurora is not overarching. It's directed primarily at Mars. I would say the overarching issue is the view that searching for life in its origins, its evolution, and indeed the specific conditions it requires is an important target for many ESA programs. And starting with the beginning of time, you know, with the Big Bang, through targets like Gaia and Darwin, you're going to look at the conditions that create the right circumstance for life, through to much more explicit sniffing and scratching things. Again, there, going to Mars is certainly part of the story, but I'm also feel in the grand picture of things that analyzing what comets are made of, or analyzing what primordial material might be like, is a very important link between the stellar aspects of the problem, the extra solar system aspects, and the solar system itself, because you're looking at, as far as we know, life only exists on the bodies around stars, and yet the critical clue must be the stuff that comes together around stars. So for me, a mission like Rosetta is an extraordinarily important element in this key, but maybe my view of what astrobiology is about is a little overarching, rather than starting bottom up with saying, well, Mars is the place to look because it's the most likely place to look. But on planetary exploration, we can get rid of the ignorance. So for me, going to Mars is a very major aspect, but cometary, small body missions, understanding the building bricks, I think also understanding where the building bricks are within the wider context of the galaxy is also something that suddenly opens its opportunities. So Gaia, which people don't think of as anything to do with astrobiology, for me is actually the next logical step beyond the simple detection of extrasolar planets.
Since you've mentioned Gaia, David, would you like to tell us something specific about it and how you think it can contribute to astrobiology? What sort of a mission is it?
What will it's it do? A mission to really take apart our galaxy and understand what our galaxy is made of. And, of course, the physicist says, well, of course, the galaxy is largely dark matter. Clearly, for me, that is not a satisfactory answer, because all of us are stardust. We all came out of the stars. I think that Gaia, which is to actually look at this clump of stars we happen to live in, I think Gaia should unravel our galaxy, but at the same time it should be able to really get a better handle on how stars come together and how they... We get a lot of information about their evolution and their the way their history fits with the history of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And, potentially, we should be able to get some information on planets. So I think that statistical element is what's so critical in getting to really see what's so special about the Earth, because the Earth is the only case where we know we have a solution.
Let's return to the solar system. ESA's got this ExoMars project, is that what it's
called? Yeah, it seems to be called ExoMars now.
What's that one going to be about?
Well, it's about landing something on Mars with, I think, several capacities. One is a drilling capacity to get under the surface. We're getting under the surface with the Marsis radar now, but this is real physical getting under, although the Marsis radar will get deeper than any drill. And it should then contain a rather classical notional package of what astrobiology should require, you know, the mass spectrometers, etc., the scratch and sniff it sort of chemistry set. I think there's going to be a big political battle about who does what. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's there's a lot of people interested in a very small room on the ship. But it's, I think it's a terrific start. And I believe that it is the astrobiology element that is probably what's most important for the science community as well as the public. There will be, I think, some geophysics packages, etc., which again brings me to this problem that life doesn't occur on its own. It occurs in an environment. And that, I think, is an aspect that you can get if you're just looking for the bits of organic material. If you don't actually take into account the total environment, you're not getting the full complexity of the system that's given rise to us. The analogy on the Earth is, I think it's likely that plate tectonics and the interior churning of the Earth is a critical element in making the Earth a particularly good place for life. And I think the more you look at the Earth as as a sort of ecological whole, the more you realize that the things that seem just like dull physical coincidences that actually play their part. One of the things we have to do is make sure that we get a full understanding of the environmental circumstances of Mars, not just the past environment, but the present environment. And so I believe there are rather dull things to do, like meteorology and seismology, etc., all part of the picture. Because on the Earth, I'm sure meteorology and seismology have a part to play in maintaining the ecosystem that we live in.
Right, that's very interesting. You've got a more holistic view of things than I sometimes hear from the biologists, if I may say so. I agree with you that these things are all interlinked and they can be oversimplified. Tell me about your agency's missions to places other than Mars, because that's not the only show in town.
Yeah, we're certainly... we have a mission to Venus, it's just John. We're hoping to have a mission to Mercury, Pepe Colombo. And then I think we're certainly in discussions over what to do next on the giant planets. I think we could just about do a giant planet mission ourselves, but I think if it would be better going as an international cooperation. My money would be on Jupiter rather than Saturn, although, you know, the more I look at the Saturn system as exposed by Cassini, the more my point about we don't really understand any planet till we've been there comes home. I mean, did you expect Enceladus to have this?
I certainly didn't.
No, I certainly didn't. It was my instrument that first detected it. But I think Jupiter is the place to go, because I think Galileo, wonderful mission though it was, didn't produce its full potential simply because of its being communications challenged. So I really think there's a lot to be done still at Jupiter. But then what Galileo did superbly illustrate to us, there is this extraordinary moon system that I don't think can ignore, you know, that Europa has potentially an ocean under the surface. I don't think you can ignore the fact that the other moons are different. Io is volcanically active. What does that mean? And then why is Callisto, that looked just like Ganymede, in many, many respects, looks so unlike it in many others? Why isn't, why does Ganymede have a strong magnetic field? I mean, everybody said, no, impossible. Here, it turned up that there was one. We just don't understand. And who knows which one of those places has the spark for life in the future. Would also point out Titan. Titan has all of the ingredients except oxygen. You know, they're in the atmosphere, and the atmosphere is cooking because there's a meteorology, it's a stirring of the system. A billion years' time, it'll be warm enough perhaps to get the oxygen out of the ice. Hey, the first little green men are going to find, yeah. Hey, what's this people? It'll rust before they have time to develop.
Realistically, what's the earliest that we could return to Europa and get a lander down there and start seeing what all that dark material is?
Somewhere between 2015 and 2020. And I think this is a real debate that has to be made. How much do you want to commit to this? Is it a $2 billion mission or a $3 billion mission like Cassini? Or can you really bring back a great deal of science going all that way with something that's cheaper? We in Europe have been looking at cheaper options just because it's not because we're cheapskate, but because we don't have as much money. And we've come up with some interesting potential. One of the deep problems you have with Europa is the lifetime in the Europa vicinity. It's not in the pleasantest part of the Jovian environment. It's very high radiation. So your spacecraft's going to die. Do you go all that way just to investigate Europa? Or do you find some way perhaps to keep coming back to Europa while you're doing other things? These are the things we're hoping are being debated. Joint ESA-NASA team meets again. They're meeting in California. These are the things that, for me, are open, wide open questions, or the principle of going back to the giant planets is a principle for me.
Thank you, David, for outlining such an exciting program for astrobiology. The commitment of yourself and your colleagues to conducting astrobiology experiments throughout a range of missions is truly visionary. We'll be watching closely the results from the forthcoming Aurora program and the ExoMars project. May both of these missions succeed in all aspects, not just the astrobiology. I find your idea that Jupiter should form a target very interesting. You and I, of course, can remember the images which Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 sent back of the Jovian system back in 1978 and 79. Back then, we could hardly have imagined that about a quarter of a century later, we would be debating Jupiter as one of the next astrobiology targets. There is much of interest to do there. I'm thinking of Europa and its buried ocean, and then the moons Ganymede and Callisto. These strike me as being very interesting targets, and so let's see how the mission shapes up in the future. So, join us next time for part two of this interview, where we will discuss the funding of the agency and also the standing of astrobiology in respect of the older discipline of astrophysics. I'm Simon Mitten. Goodbye for now.
Thank you for listening to Radio Astrobiology, the podcast of Astrobiology Magazine. To hear other programs or give feedback, visit our website at astrobio.net. We invite you to listen next time to learn more about humanity's greatest adventure.